Good morning, New Mexico, and welcome to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're broadcasting live from the Santa Fe Baking Company on Cordova Road and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. We're also podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services, and you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Later on in the program, we're going to be speaking to folks from the Earthworks Institute and Wild Prairie Partners of the New Mexico Wildlife Federation about what's going on in this area. Right now, I would like to welcome, it is the first Wednesday of the month, Bill Hutchison. He is with the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society, and Ulla Peterson, who is founder and director of Kindred Spirits Animal Sanctuary. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Good morning, Mary Charlotte.
Good morning. Thank you.
It's wonderful to have you both. Now, Bill.
Mary Charlotte.
We've been doing this for quite some time.
I know, like 3 years? 3 years? Four years?
Is that right? Three or four years. I've been doing this show for over four and a half years.
We've been doing it for a long time.
And what is it that we're doing?
We're talking about animals.
That's
first
right.
Wednesday of every month.
That's right, animals. So what do you have to say about animals today?
Today, I have to say a couple of things, and it's all housekeeping business, but it's really important. We're having a shelter cleanup event for our dog park. We have three dog parks out at the Santa Fe Animal Shelter. One gigantic 22-acre dog park that is beautiful and lots of natural landscaping for a whole bunch of dogs. And we've got a couple of small one-dog-at-a-time dog parks for those dogs that aren't dog people. But in the way of dogs and people, not all of what goes into the dog park comes out, if you know what I'm saying. So
now, what do you say?
Oh, Mary Charlotte, I think you know. So on Saturday from 10 to noon, we'll be having a cleanup organized by our volunteers and our amazing volunteer committee. From 10 to noon, there's a potluck at noon. You can bring the whole family. Now, in a little bit, Ulla is going to tell you about her open house, which is on the same day. And friends, this is not an either-or situation. This is definitely the kind of day where you should be doing both things.
Both and.
You have a chance to support two of Santa Fe's finest animal welfare organizations in the same day.
That's saying a lot, because there's a lot of Santa Fe animal welfare organizations, all of which deserve the title of number one.
Saturday's a twofer. You can do a whole bunch on Saturday. I also want to tell you about a few animals we have right now who need a little extra special help from our community to get into some good new homes. Donner is at the shelter. He is so good. On Monday morning, I came into to the shelter, and our kennel staff were cleaning everything up, and we have a guy named Alex who works there who's awesome with the animals. And Alex comes down the hall, and here comes Donner trotting right after him, just helping him clean up, moving around the shelter in the morning, just as happy as he could be. He's a German Shepherd mix. He's really energetic, and he's pretty sweet. He's a little dominant, so if you have a dog, we'd love to do a meet and greet. You can bring your dog to the shelter and introduce him to Donner and make sure they get along okay. We also have Cedar, Cedar's an old guy, and today seems like a good day to tell you a little bit about an old guy. He's a black lab mix. He's about 8 years old. He's unbelievable. He's so gentle and sweet. He's one of the most empathic dogs I've ever seen. He reads you, and there are those dogs, especially labs sometimes, who just look at you and you know they've taken the measure of you. And he's one of those dogs.
But he could hang up a sign that says Cedar, empath.
Exactly.
$5.
Psychiatry, 5 cents.
Right.
Because hanging out with him is amazingly therapeutic. On Monday, I also went into, toward the end of the day, I like to go into our cat rooms. I'm more of a dog person, but there's an energy that cats give you, I think, that is very particular to them. And we have these colony rooms where multiple
particular
cats...
Particular is a very diplomatic word.
It's very diplomatic because sometimes it involves claws and teeth. But with these cats I'm going to tell you about, it was definitely not a claw and teeth kind of situation. Tika is a boy and Abelina is a girl, and they live together in one of our colony rooms. And Abelina came out of a really unpleasant situation, and she's much happier at the shelter, but she'd really love to have a good home. She's a soft gray calico long-haired cat, just quiet, and she's like if Pema Chodron was a cat, then Adelina would be Pema Chodron.
Does she shave her fur?
She does not, but she sits and has that wisdom in her. And Tika is very, very different. Tika is five. He's a brown tabby, short hair. He's the most unassuming looking cat, but he has, if there was going to be a, He's a Huck Finn. If Adelina is the Pema Chodron, then Tika is the Huck Finn of cats. Definitely the kind of cat who'd be really happy going down a riverboat on the Mississippi. But he needs a
great
place to live.
With an open mind.
With an open mind. Now, Abilina is 2 and Tika is 5, which means starting Friday, they'll both be available for a lowered adoption fee of $20. We are facing kitten season here right around the corner, which means you can certainly take advantage of the spay-neuter services of the shelter clinic, but you can also adopt an adult cat from the shelter, which will help us a lot as these kittens come in and we'll need to find homes for them. So all cats a year or older starting Friday will be available for a limited time for an adoption fee of $20.
I was actually thinking of farming my dogs out for a week and getting a cat just for a week because I've got some mice.
Yeah, cats are sometimes good at catching mice, but cats kind of do their own thing. And if you get them...
But a good mouser is so much better than a good mousetrap.
A good mouser is way better than a good mousetrap. But cats are not the sort of creatures that you can put an ad in the employment section and say, good mouser needed, and somebody comes to your door and loyally dispatches the mice.
That's because they can't read.
Oh, they can read.
Unlike
Believe
dogs.
Me, cats can read. But they don't like to do things that are necessarily expected of them. Cats like to, what do they say, subvert the dominant paradigm.
Ola Peterson is founder and director of the Kindred Spirits Animal Sanctuary. Tell us about the sanctuary.
Well, this is a sanctuary for older animals, and specifically dogs and horses and poultry. And we do end-of-life care there, so it's really for the real old ones that are, in general, considered non-adoptable anymore. And they come to us from the shelters, off the road, wherever they really are stranded at this time in their lives. And most of them have been traumatized quite severely, so, and have some ailments. And so it is really to help them feel wanted and loved and cared for, secure and happy towards the end of their lives. And we keep them until the end and through the end. And I'm a nurse myself and a bereavement counselor. And so that is really what we do, end-of-life care, hospice for animals.
How did you get into this?
Well, being a nurse and little by little, I've always been in animal rescue. And little by little, coming to realize that there's really a special need in our culture for the old ones, as there is for people, too. And in the throwaway culture that we live in, excuse me, and I think also the ownership sort of mentality that we all have been raised with, that animals often become an item in our minds when they're no longer, say, cute and funny and sort of, you know, can do their own thing, when they need more than we thought they did, maybe. And so I think that's part of the problem. And so what we're trying to do is give them a home and teach people with their animals how to, or inspire them to care for their older animals at home, and to also change really the paradigm of, into one of what can we do for them? How can we help our elders? And it doesn't just stop with the animals. It really goes on into thinking of our own aging. What do we need? What are other people's needs? So really developing more empathy and how we can all help each other.
So when people learn to care for an older animal, that helps them learn to care for their parents, say, or grandparents?
Exactly, their neighbors themselves, and really look at what are the needs in aging for anyone in our family, in our community, and how can those that are frail and vulnerable in our community, how can we help them? And if we all live long enough, maybe, we may have some of the same needs ourselves at some point. And we might be, happy if somebody else would step up to the plate then.
And take care of us.
Yeah.
Tell us about your dog, Salvador.
Okay. Oh, Salvador. Salvador came here through the Santa Fe Animal Shelter. And thanks to Bill and his co-workers over here. And Salvador is a pit bull, and he's quite an older fellow. And when he came a couple of years ago, he could not walk. He was just crawling on the ground, and he was severely crippled. He had had broken limbs and bones and so forth, and the vets really felt that he had probably been used as a bait dog in dog fighting. Salvador came, we did a lot of rehabilitation, and it wasn't really until he started feeling loved and cared for and really secure that he was here to stay. He was not going to be abandoned again. He was not going to have to protect himself from the onslaught of a fighting situation that he started trying. And so the short story is that through a lot of ups and downs and ups and falling and so forth, he can now get up and walk a short distance. And he is just a love of, he has the biggest heart you could imagine.
He's a true love dog.
He is a love dog. He really is. And his smile just radiates a mile or two or three.
I know. I mean, when I went to the shelter, it was last year, I met a lot of your dogs over there. And that's the one whom I remember the best. With his lumbering walk from all of his injuries, he's still such a happy dog.
He is a very happy dog. And he is really, I think sometimes when I get a little worn or a little tired, I think, well, if Salvador can do that, if he was able to turn a page with all the trauma in his life, maybe I could do that too and try a little harder, you know.
Right.
So he's a real teacher, a real inspiration for a lot of people, including myself.
Now, you have had quite a bit of new building going on there, yes. Thanks to some very generous and kind people in Santa Fe.
Yes, we have. We're really fortunate. We operate out of my own home, and it was originally not built with this in mind, so we've had to do a few adjustments.
You didn't think you were going to have 48 ducks?
So we really needed to do just a couple of modifications. We don't live in luxuries or anything, but we do want to make sure it's secure and that it is suitable for the animals. So we had for some time been needing a multi-purpose space, not only to keep the big dogs in at night during the winter, because we really didn't have a space for that. And it's very important for their old bones and joints and stuff. And then also where we can teach. We do workshops for the public and teaching elder care and how to work with our animals when they are elderly and the choices we have, and inspire people to really carry through with it and feel good about themselves that they can. And so this space has come about through a real generous contribution from the professional building community in Santa Fe, but also in Albuquerque. And the Santa Fe Area Home Builders Association, Honeydew, Centex Homes, Bill Cox from Advantage Construction have all donated tremendous amounts of not only design and materials and skilled labor, but really a lot of love. It is a real space of love. It's 400 square feet, and it's a practical kind of room, and we're celebrating that at our open house that is coming up here next weekend.
So the open house is 2 days. It's Saturday and Sunday of this weekend.
Yeah.
And it's from 10 in the morning until 4 in the afternoon, both days.
Yeah.
And basically you go down Highway 14. How many miles from Santa Fe?
Well, I'd say it's about 8 miles, isn't it, Bill? And
it's past the Allsups.
Yeah, it's past the Allsups, and you go another probably 10 minutes, and you get to the Lone Butte General Store, and that's where the Shell station is on the right. And you go another half a mile, and there will be signs and balloons. And each day we have talks by our veterinarians and healthcare providers. And at 11 o'clock and at 1 o'clock, and they're free, and it's a nice place to visit with your family, too, and you get a tour, you meet the poultry. We've been talking about the dogs, but we also have rescue poultry and two older horses. And so it's learning about our pets, our horses, and also our food animals, in how we, in my mind, need to treat them, you know, with respect and caring and a good environment.
I would think that doing your job, you really don't get to get away very much, even for a half a day, much less a vacation. I mean, how do you handle it?
Well, I got away today to do the radio campaign with you, and that's great.
So this is your 1 hour a year vacation?
That's right. No, I, fortunately, I'm sort of programmed to be a home buddy, so that helps a lot. And I love being at home with the animals, and that's really, it sustains me, it gives me a tremendous amount of joy, and it is not a hardship.
Do people ever come to you and say, oh, you have an old age home for animals, I'd like to pay you X amount of money so that you will take care of my animal?
Yes, actually, that does happen quite a bit. And unfortunately, or for them, I shouldn't say unfortunately, but our mission is really not set up for that. And although we are nonprofit and we are sustained by private donations, but we are really set up to take those that are totally indigent and that have no other way. We really rarely take from private individuals because, not that we don't recognize their needs, but there usually is family or friends or neighbors that could be involved, and we are happy to support that and help them get that organized and to stay with them in terms of support and follow up on it. But usually there are some other means if we just stretch a little bit further. We are very limited with the amount of animals we can take in because we are all volunteers, and we only have so much space. And because each one is really the focus of our care, we are limited to 20 dogs in two groups, the small ones and the big ones. And
it must be a situation of continual heartbreak for you because there are more animals that really need what you're doing than you can accommodate.
Yes, it is. It is. And it is hard to say no so often. We get many calls each day. It is. However, I have to keep in mind that those that we have taken into our care is for us to really care about and not to warehouse. And so we need to keep our resources, and that means hands-on energy and love, really, that we can do in 24 hours and with our volunteers and myself. We do a lot of what we call brush and cuddle. And so we do a lot of individual, you know, sitting with, caring with, and remember, a lot of these animals
brush
are
brush and cuddle,
yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Brush and cuddle. And you can have your cup of tea along with it. You can put your feet up. And it's a lot of these animals are dying or going towards the end of life, so they need that kind of comfort. And it is also important for us as people to learn to be with that and that it is okay, really. I cry a lot because it is sad. It is. But then I, you know, move on. And the grace in all of this, or one of the graces, is really that when one bed is empty, there is room for another one. And we take in another one then that needs that and that we can give that kind of care for.
What is your typical day like?
Well, we start early in the morning, and we everybody goes out, of course, to do their business in the yard, and we pick the yards and we feed and set up for the rest of the day, and we do a lot of poop patrolling all over the grounds, and we feed again at noon, but in between then, in the late morning, we do what we call brush and cuddle, so that each of them, and sometimes some more than others, depending on what the needs are, get that special individual care. And we monitor how everybody is getting along because it really is a community of not only their own kind, but also with the people that are coming in. We have one or two volunteers that come in every morning, and we're always looking for more because things happen in people's lives.
And to that end, 471-5366.
Yes, to call, please. Leave a message. If we don't pick up, we might be out doing the pooper scoopers or brush and cuddle. We set up, of course, for the rest of the day. We do groundwork and lots of other business to look at, you know, and then we feed again at night, and everyone is out doing the business again at 11:30 at night.
Ola Peterson is founder and director of the Kindred Spirits Animal Sanctuary, and they're having an open house from 10 to 4 on Saturday and Sunday of this weekend, May 10th and 11th. And the number over there is 471-5366, and it's on Highway 14, about 10 or 15 miles south of Santa Fe.
Uh-huh. And we also have our website, if you'd like to go to that, and it's Kindred Spirits, NM, like New Mexico, .org, and you will get the specific directions there and more information on exactly what's going on.
And not to forget, there is a, what is it? What's
the
wonderful
cleanup day on Saturday, 10 to noon this Saturday, with a potluck at noon. So you can come, bring gloves, bring food if you'd like, but feel free to join in with the grub. All the animals I told you about today, Donner, Cedar, Tika, and Abelina, are on our website, along with all our other adoptable animals at www.sfhumanesociety.org. And from the shelter standpoint, I would encourage you to go see Kindred Spirits if you haven't seen it. Ula does really fantastic work, and we really couldn't be prouder to have her as a partner working together for the animals of this community.
Bill Hutchison is with the Santa Fe Animal Shelter and Humane Society, Ola Peterson with Kindred Spirits Animal Sanctuary. Thank you so much both for being with us.
Thanks, Mary Charlotte.
Thank you for having us.
We're going to take a little break right now. Please stay tuned to KSFR. I'd like now to welcome Jan Willem Janssens. He is with Earthworks Institute. David Van Holstein is with Wild Prairie Partners, and Alan Hamilton with the New Mexico Wildlife Federation. Welcome, gentlemen, to the Radio Cafe.
Good morning,
Mary Charlotte.
So, Jan Willem, we've had you on the air a number of times. You're with Earthworks Institute, and the recurring topic is the Galisteo Basin, the Galisteo watershed, and creating basically a common vision for what's going on there in terms of the way the earth is understood, preserved, used, the way water flows, and so on. What are you up to now?
All right, that's a very good summary. What we're up to right now is to understand what we've learned so far and how that translate in an understanding about wildlife in the basin. So we have a nice segue this morning. We started with animals, and we're continuing with animals.
We started with domestic pets, and now we're going to wild animals. Well,
absolutely. And so we have learned in the last year and a half, 2 years, in our partnership conversations that there is an enormous interest in preserving the treasures in the Galisteo Basin. At the same time, there's an enormous interest in living in the basin or using certain resources that are in the basin, mining resources, oil and gas, and of course the amenities of the landscape, and just being there for whatever reason, water. So the question is now, how can we strike a balance work with all the partners from the county, state agencies, ranchers, landowners, conservation groups, community associations, to figure out how this vision that we've gradually been developing can be put on the ground in practical terms.
I would think that one of the great obstacles to any kind of common shared vision is the fact that lots of different people own land, and that sense of land ownership is kind of diametrically opposed to common vision, in the sense that I feel like I can do whatever I want with my land.
Well, that is maybe an initial observation that may be made, but actually we found that there are pieces of common ground and common vision among a lot of the landowners and other interest groups as well. And that is actually one of the things that we want to find out right now in our upcoming meeting this coming Friday, May 9th, at the Community College, is what are these pieces of common vision and common ground that we all have, especially with the landowners, about the treasures in the basin, about the threats that we see, and how to do something about it.
Let's talk about some of the treasures in the basin. How would you describe the treasures of the Galisteo area?
Oh, that's a very difficult question. But the ranchers and the landowners that we have interviewed have listed, for instance, the wildlife, the large ranches, the grasslands, the way of life. It's just something that we feel that has to be preserved.
Well, tell us about the wildlife there. You're particularly focused on prairie dogs, is that correct?
Actually, that was my history. I've moved on from prairie dogs because there are groups now that are like People for Native Ecosystems that are doing a very good job of handling the question of prairie dogs in the city along with Wild Earth Guardians. So when we formed Wild Prairie Partners a couple of years ago, it was with sort of prairie dogs as an animal that would be a keystone species in our ecosystem and perhaps in the Galisteo Basin ultimately. So the focus of Wild Prairies Partners is beyond just a matter of prairie dogs. It's all the animals in the ecosystem of which the prairie dogs are a keystone species. So we said, well, probably the best thing to do if we want to preserve species in the basin would be to have a wildlife sanctuary. And this is where we got started. We have received a grant from the Department of Game and Fish. And we got together with the people in the wild, with the Galisteo Watershed Partnership. And we found a natural coalescing here along with Wildlife Federation. So all of these things are coming together. The prairie dogs will obviously be part of it in the long run, but we're interested in all the animals.
There's been such a groundswell of interest in the Galisteo Basin recently because of the oil and gas exploration.
Well, that's something that I thought we'd have to get into.
But instead of concentrating on what it is that's being threatened, or what the threats are that are coming to the Galisteo Basin, we wanted to start to look at what actually is being threatened and what are the treasures, so we could take a more positive approach at trying to understand the Galisteo Basin. So it's really an extraordinary region because it's, depending on whose maps you're looking at, either three or four major ecoregions come together. It's probably one of the only places in New Mexico where you have that many ecoregions converging in one place.
Tell us about those ecoregions. What's the nature of them?
The most northern ecoregion is the Rocky Mountain ecoregion, typically here the Sangre de Cristo Mountains. Then from the east is the plateau landscape, or the technical term is the Cuesta landscape, like the Road Glorieta Mesa and the Cerro Blancos on the San Cristobal Range. And from the south, we have coming in the northern tip, basically, of what is also called the Sky Islands or the Arizona-New Mexico mountain region. Mountains like the Sandia Mountains, the Ortiz Mountain, and then from there south all the way to the Chiricahuas, basically, and the Gila Mountains are part of that mountain region. And then on the western side, we have the Colorado, New Mexico, and Arizona plateau landscape that runs all the way to the Rio Grande. And the Galisteo Basin is actually the area that encompasses the southern tips of the Sangre de Cristo, the Roe Mesa, then the Sky Islands with Cerro Pelon, Ortiz Mountain, Cerrillos Hills, and then it flows all the way to the delta of the Rio Grande.
One of the things that you talk about that's very important is having a wildlife corridor. What does that mean?
The big animals, the wolves, the bears, the cougars, have to roam. And the area around the Galisteo Basin is quite fragmented by fences, roads. And in fact, it's one of the more fragmented areas along the whole chain that Jan Willem mentioned. The chain runs all the way from Mexico all the way up into Canada. So because the prairie dogs obviously don't roam, they tend to be stay in one area their entire lives, but the animals that depend upon them have to move. So our picture of the sanctuary has actually been enlarged now so that it is not just a 100,000 acre or a bunch of plots that are connected. It's an area that will actually be dynamic. And we're tying in with Wild Prairie Partners with groups in to the south of us, in particular there's a group called Pathways out of Placitas that we're very close with, and then also in the larger picture with the New Mexico Wilderness Alliance, and also with an outfit headed by Dave Foreman known as the Rewilding Institute. So we're bringing together not just people in the Galisteo Basin, which is the focus of this, but we're we in Wild Prairies ultimately want to tie in with the bigger picture. So.
There are several mountain ranges that kind of surround the Galisteo Basin, the Sangre de Cristos, the Ortiz, the Sandias, and the Jemez. And a lot of those lands are public lands. And animals migrate through those corridors to those different places, and not just mammals, but there's raptors, birds, arthropods, all kinds of animals. And the connectivity in the public lands isn't so much a problem, but the private lands sometimes can fragment things and keep those migratory pathways from being viable for animals.
What happens then? Do animals, I mean, if let's say there's fences and barbed wires and large migrating animals can't migrate. What do they do?
We had an example given by some ranch managers in the last couple of weeks where, for instance, pronghorn, it's the pronghorn antelope. They cannot actually jump fences. They crawl underneath. So the lowest strand of a fence needs to be set at least 18 inches. Otherwise, they cannot migrate. So if that's not done, or if for other reasons, for instance, a mountain range, several of which we have in the Galisteo Basin, even these volcanic ridges that are maybe 100 or 200 feet tall, cannot be scaled by these animals because they're too steep. And so what happens is in a time when it's very dry and they cannot migrate to other pastures, they will just stay in one place and don't have enough to eat and get too weak. Other problems are, for instance, in a very strong winter, if a snowstorm comes in, they are going to follow a path to a canyon where there's still some moisture and some grass maybe in those areas. But then if the snow traps them there, they cannot get out. And for instance, last year about 50 or so got just starved because they couldn't go anywhere. Studies done on another ranch indicated that basically there are pastures, but the pastures are completely separated by fences, roads, mountain ranges, and that it is very important to create these connective pathways for these animals between these pastures so that they have a choice as to where to go.
One of the things that is difficult in looking at a large region such as the Galisteo Basin and talking about preservation and wildlife and so on is that there is real financial pressure to sell out. Let's say you have a ranch where you can make way more money selling it for development than you can by ranching. What do you do?
Well, one of the things we're finding when we go out and we've been interviewing a lot of the ranch owners in the Galisteo Basin is that they would really like to preserve their way of life and preserve their lands. And that's in spite of the pressures. It's harder all the time to make a living ranching and farming, especially on the smaller ranches and farms. And one of the things we're doing in the New Mexico Wildlife Federation is trying to find different incentives for small landowners who really do want to maintain their lifestyle and stay on the land.
What are some of those incentives?
Some of those incentives would be conservation easements, which now have a transferability. And if you put a conservation or wildlife easement on your property, you can end up getting some money for that. Some access programs for people to go onto land, and either for hunting and fishing or to observe animals. Those are two that come to mind. There are lots of farm bill programs, too, that New Mexico has really not been very good at taking advantage of. So we want to get better at finding alternatives for landowners who are interested in staying on the land. And our sense is that in the Galisteo Basin, that most of these ranchers and ranch managers we've talked to really are interested in preserving the land.
Now, how has possibility of oil and gas drilling affected the kind of conversations that have been going on in the last year?
Oh, interestingly, I think, Mary Charlotte, that the conversation about oil and gas has precipitated a lot of thinking about what the solutions might be, and actually it has brought a lot of people out of the woodwork, especially landowners who have said, like, wow, we see these treasures in the Galisteo Basin, and they're being really threatened now by potential oil and gas drilling. At the same time, of course, there are landowners who have a different view of that. But we find a lot of people that actually are interested in seeing how they can preserve their land for the reasons why they actually build a home there. And so we want to connect to those people, and we have, through Earthworks Institute, for instance, programs going on for riparian improvement, grassland improvement, wetland improvements that make that use federal and state dollars and private matching funds to enhance the ecologic quality of those places. And then we do that not on a landowner by landowner basis, but we try to work with entire neighborhoods so that we bind or work together with a dozen or more individuals on maybe 1,000 acres to find solutions for the ecological health of those places, and then also work with the landowners on issues of where to place roads, where to place the building envelope for new homes, etc., so that they are in ecologically suitable places, and so that the wildlife can just migrate between the homes to the riparian areas, etc.
What is an ecologically suitable and what's an ecologically unsuitable place to put new housing when you're talking in that, when thinking in that way?
Okay, the basin is, for instance, at the bottom of it, where a lot of the flow patterns come together, historically already for thousands of years, is an area where flooding occurs. It is a historical flood zone. Now you won't see much flooding from the river, but any 5 to 10 years you may still see a lot of flooding from tributaries, from arroyos that come in. And sometimes those floods come with also a foot of sediment, of dirt that just washes over those meadows. And so those bottom lands, those bottom meadows, are therefore very unsuitable. Also, they're not suitable because they are basically Grand Central, as I call it, for wildlife, because in dawn and at dusk, they wait in the areas of the pinyon juniper zone transition towards the grassland to cross those grasslands to go to the river bosques and to hang out there, to find shelter, to forage, or to drink. And so it is very important not to put any barriers in those transition zones. At the same time, the pinyon juniper hillsides have arroyos and mountain or ridge lines, where also these animals, especially a cougar, bear, and deer, hang out. And you don't want to build there. So you need to build on the slope lines, kind of hidden between the trees, where the animals wouldn't necessarily walk, because they will typically walk on the crest lines where they can see other predators or other animals, or in the arroyos.
So when you are talking to people about building, is everybody on board with that?
Well, there's a lot of practicality to it for them too. So a lot of people soon understand that.
Yeah, the county, and Jan Willem can say more about this, is in the process of doing a land management plan now in the Galisteo Basin. And we're fortunate here in Santa Fe County to have just a fantastic group at land use led by Jack Bolkmeyer. And we understand that economic development is something that's important to any community, and yet it can't be the end-all to whether or not a community is functioning well and healthy or not, and oftentimes that's given, it's almost a trump. And there are other indications about how well a community's functioning and how well it's preserving its natural resources, its waters, its open space. And I think one of the real key to understanding how well a community's doing is how well it's preserving not only these elements of place that are what attract people here in the first place, but also the wildlife. If the wildlife is healthy and there's an area for it and we've taken them into account, then I think we're doing well as a community. And the county land use in Santa Fe, we're so fortunate because they do take these other things into account.
I think that it's really important to be looking at and also creating models of human beings and wildlife coexisting in a sort of sustainable way. Hate to use the cliche word sustainable, but nevertheless, there it is.
Well, to me, the health of the wildlife is sort of like our canary in the mine shaft. You know, if the wildlife is healthy, then the likelihood is that the area where the humans live is going to be fairly healthy also.
And it's interesting when we go out and we talk to the ranchers about what the treasures are and why they live in the Galisteo Basin and want to preserve it. It's the very things that we would be preserving for wildlife. So there's a real parallel there between you preserve areas for wildlife and you're also preserving the same treasures that people want to live there.
So you sent me some notes, and one of them was called information gaps. And I think it's always good to talk about what we don't know yet and what we're trying to figure out. What are the information gaps?
Oh, thank you so much for bringing that up, because there are so many information gaps about wildlife in the Galisteo Basin. That's actually why we are focusing on this right now. There has been a lot of study done on wildlife patterns and even what species live in specific areas around the Galisteo Basin. But for the Galisteo Basin, we don't even know exactly, based on surveys or so, whether we have threatened and endangered species there. The state has identified 24 potential threatened and endangered species, but no surveys have been done.
Who does those surveys?
I believe it's the Department of Game and Fish.
So if the Department of Game and Fish doesn't do the surveys, then I mean, how do you get them to do them?
Well, here's
especially in a rather Endangered Species Act unfriendly environment.
Well, this is a study that the New Mexico Game and Fish has done 2 years ago. It's called the Comprehensive Wildlife Conservation Strategy. And it's really a fantastic document. It's very well done. It takes into account all the species of concern throughout the state. And what we're hoping for now is to really help find money to start implementing some of these plans. So in the Galisteo Basin, because they have so many of these important ecoregions coming together, it's certainly more rich than I think any of us know at this point. And one of the reasons we want to have this forum on Friday is to meet with the ranchers, because they're the ones who are out there on the land continually, and we want to hear from them what wildlife they're encountering and what changes they've seen over the years and what their concerns are, because that kind of expertise is as valuable as the expertise that the scientists bring to from the biologists from the Game and Fish Department.
Tell us about the upcoming event.
Good. So this Friday we're starting with a two-part set of meetings. It's a general Galisteo Watershed Partnership quarterly forum, and we've now combined it by actually taking the quarterly forum of August and bringing it in earlier to have more of an impact in our conversation. So this coming Friday, May 9th, at the community college from 8:30 to 12:30, we're coming together with
in the morning. I take
in it. The morning. That is yes. We're talking with. First, we'll have a round of introductions in which we hope to hear from, especially landowners, what their experiences are with wildlife in the basin. And then we'll hear from both scientists, activists, and also other landowners and land managers what their perspectives are, more in a panel format. And then hear from a representative from the New Mexico Game and Fish, how what he has heard from those people corresponds with the comprehensive wildlife conservation strategy that Alan just mentioned. And then Rosemary Romero, our facilitator, will lead us in a conversation for an hour and a half at the tail end of the meeting to see what the common ground is, whether we have a common vision coming out of all these pieces of listening and learning that we've been doing that lead us to a more pointed list of potential solutions or action steps, and also information gaps, like you just hinted upon, that need to be addressed. And then, therefore, we have scheduled this meeting on June 20th, also a Friday, the same times, 8:30 to 12:30 at the community college, to go through that list of findings, basically, and come up with specific action steps for different constituents, whether they are landowners or maybe Santa Fe County or the state of New Mexico, to craft a package of activities that we can pursue as individual groups or partners of the Galisteo Watershed Partnership or as the partnership itself. And because that's basically what this Galisteo Partnership does. We're a coalition of groups of stakeholders interested in the Galisteo Basin to bring information that's kind of covered in all over the place together, share that with practical knowledge in the field of people who live in a place, and then formulate steps to, toward action.
I think one of the things that is sort of awesome about what you guys are doing is you bring so many people together whom you don't usually think of as sitting around the table and chatting, namely, you know, developers, landowners, ranchers, conservationists, water people, and so on.
They're all stakeholders. So it's natural to bring them together, and as Jan Willem said, the common ground, because even though developers may not necessarily agree with the animal people, we do have common concerns. And it was very interesting in this regard that a few years ago, as an example, Quivira Coalition, which historically did not see eye to eye with the environmentalists, all of a sudden realized we have things in common. We have to work together. And this is sort of the same thing, except on a larger scale. We're bringing together everybody who's going to be affected by this.
Yeah, I would like to add to that, actually, that we're more or less following a similar model as a Quivira Coalition by bringing people together in the format of a coalition to stay away from antagonistic solutions or solutions that are not widely shared based and in which people react based on a lack of information and a lack of understanding of what other people treasure. And so through the Cattle Stay Up Partnership, we've seen, for instance, that prior to the partnership's existence in late 90s and early 2000s, that a lot of activities took place in the Galisteo Basin in terms of development, road widening, forest service actions that a lot of people didn't even know about or that weren't even coordinated with other agencies. And that had led to feelings of hurt among people who had very specific feelings about the basin. And in the last 4 or 5 years, I think what we have achieved with the partnership is that people are in early stage aware of what's happening and what's coming to the basin, and that we have now a forum to talk about these issues with each other and bring that to the attention of decision makers like Santa Fe County, and then push for specific changes in ways decisions are being made. And I think we've heard clearly from Santa Fe County planners that our partnership's work has made had influence on how now the growth management department's being structured, how Santa Fe County now plans growth management based on 4 management zones, one of which is the Galisteo Basin, and so on.
Jan Willem Janssens is Executive Director of Earthworks Institute, and people can find out more by going to earthworksinstitute.org or by calling 982-9806. David Van Holstein is with Wild Prairie Partners, and what's their contact information?
We hope to have our website up within the next few weeks. It's been dragging, to be honest about it. It's been ongoing for 6 months now. The phone number, oh, my wife's not going to like this when I give it, is 982-2337.
And Alan Hamilton is with the New Mexico Wildlife Federation. How do people contact you?
They can reach me here in Santa Fe at 670-2621. And our information is on the web as well, www.mmwildlife.org.
Thank you all so much for being here. And once again, the forum on this Friday, May 9th, is at the Santa Fe Community College between 8:30 and 12:30.
And more information about the Galisteo Watershed can also be found on www.galisteowatershed.org.
Galisteowatershed.org.
The home site of the Galisteo Watershed Partnership with all its partners and activities.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having us on.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. KSFR streams live on the web at ksfr.org. You can reach me at radiocafe@ksfr.org or leave a message at 428-1528. We're also podcasting at the website santafe.radiocafe.org, where you can hear the show anytime you want to listen, thanks to Santa Fe's .foil computer services. And you can also subscribe to the show on iTunes. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. And after that, Good Morning Jazz with John Greenspan presents monthly Women in Jazz show. And by the way, thanks to Laurel Reynolds for engineering today. Okay, that's all for now. We will see you tomorrow. Ciao.